Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I start giving on that level so that God would owe me.
Whatever you do right now, don't you stop tithing.
Harvest responds only to seed, not to prayer.
This is not about material wealth. This is about God in His providence orchestrating all of history in order to bring about that which we need more than anything else, and that is to be rescued from God.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hello. So glad you've joined us here on Wretched Radio. What?
What are you doing? Why are you talking like that?
You mean, why am I talking so unifyingly? It's because I'm a peacemaker, Jimmy. That's right. Just like Barnabas in the book of Acts, you might recall the church in Jerusalem, a little skittish about the Apostle Paul's presence because, well, you know, he had a bit of a history and reputation. And it took Barnabas to bring the two groups together. And I would like to play the role of Barnabas. I am going to be your pro-life peacemaker. Why? Because there is a rift between individuals who are genuine believers and are genuinely pro-life. And I believe both sides, both groups, the pro-life group and the abolitionist groups, have the same desire. We want abortion to be abolished. So you ask, then what's the rift about? If you all agree that abortion should be illegal and it should be abolished, no exceptions. Out, gone, the pill, all of it. Not and anything about the age of the child, the development, the health of the child. None of those issues should be considered. If you take the life of a fertilized egg inside of a woman, you are taking the life of a human being, and we want that abolished. The rift, if you will, is how to go about bringing an end to abortion. For instance, pro-lifers are incrementalists. Abolitionists say, no, all of it now. And any legislation that is incremental is bad legislation. There's a difference also that is a real divide, and it's being brought to light in Tennessee right now, between pro-lifers and abolitionists regarding punishments for those who are involved in an abortion if it is illegal. I can't speak for all pro-lifers, but I think most of them would say women who have abortions shouldn't be punished criminally, but we can certainly punish the doctors. The abolitionists, at least the ones in Tennessee, are saying, nope. If you are involved in an abortion, that should be considered a criminal act. Let me give you the deets in Tennessee. Representative Jody Barrett introduced a piece of legislation. All preborn children should be protected with the same criminal and civil laws protecting the lives of born persons by repealing provisions that permit prenatal homicide and assault. And the issue, of course, is if the child is protected like a person outside of the womb, if that person's life is snuffed out in the womb, the one who did the snuffing should be put on trial the same way an individual who snuffed out the life of a person who was born would be put on trial. And that is causing a division. Now, just as an aside, no shocker, there isn't a Democrat who likes that idea. That's not a surprise. But we are seeing a division between pro-lifers and abolitionists on these two big issues. And maybe, just maybe, I would like to offer something that might possibly bring the two groups together. Now, not to do some sort of radio tease, but I'm going to share my recommendation after sharing with you what I thought was a really, it was a thoughtful article in the Christian Post. The headline, what do you know, was "The Pro-Life Movement is Facing an Internal Fracture." I think that fracture already exists, but I'm going to be Barnabas. Let me share with you, the name of the person who wrote it is A-N-I-E-L-A, Anila Ch- Schiss, I'm very sorry if I'm mispronouncing it, that I think brings out some important facts regarding justice that I think are helpful in weighing the issue. How do I come to a conclusion? How should I view this? Which side of the argument should I be on? Now, to my abolitionist friends, I'm a pro-lifer, to my abolitionist friends, just endure this for a moment, because I'm not using this to take shots at you, because I think you'll hear that when I offer my hopefully good suggestion that might bring the two sides together. So if you're an abolitionist, just hang in there. But I do think that this is important information in weighing what our position should currently be. Here we go. From the article, abolitionist voices have argued that if abortion is murder, justice demands that women who obtain abortions be prosecuted as murderers. Anything else is compromise. I affirm that. But there's, I think, more to be considered both judicially and temporally, because of the time and where we're at right now. At first glance, writes this individual, abortion is the intentional taking of an innocent human life. Murder must be prosecuted. Therefore, women must be prosecuted. That's a strong argument. But I think at this time, in this moment, there are considerations. Let me share them with you. In the Old Testament, not all killing was treated identically. There was a distinction between intentional murder and unintentional manslaughter. That's what the cities of refuge were about. Numbers 35, Deuteronomy 19, Joshua 20. They were safeguards for those who accidentally killed somebody. And it recognized that there were layered burdens of proof, intent, and circumstance. Furthermore, justice in Scripture. It's not just about the outcome. It does account for, this is important, knowledge, intent, and freedom. Knowledge, intent, and freedom. That's, you see that, I think, regularly in the Bible and throughout historical Christian theology. Augustine, did I say Augustine? Are we in Florida? Augustine and Aquinas both distinguish between objective evil and subjective culpability, between the gravity of an act and the moral guilt of the person committing it. New Testament accountability corresponds to knowledge and authority. Now, the example that this author gives is from James regarding elders. Not many of you should become teachers, for you know that you who teach will be judged with greater strictness. So greater knowledge brings greater judgment. That's important to remember. God's own distinctives regarding knowledge, authority, and responsibility run throughout the Bible. So the Bible doesn't label everybody. If you do something wrong, it's just identical categories of guilt. There are categories of guilt. For instance, in the Bible, you've got sins that were committed intentionally and not intentionally. And historically, when you take a look at it, for instance, the drug dealer, Todd, has a different guilt than the one who is taking drugs. The trafficker versus the individual who consumes it. Adults are not prosecuted like minors. Now, the question, of course, is can we apply that distinction to abortion? Because physicians, they're trained in embryology. They understand fetal development. They have studied the procedure. They know what they are doing. They have institutional authority. They're under a professional oath to do no harm versus, and this is where there can be a debate. I grant you there can be a debate about this. Women seeking abortion often do it out of fear, pressure, abandonment, misinformation in a culture that for 50 years has framed abortion as healthcare and morally neutral. Now, that doesn't mean automatically now you're just let off the hook, but it does mean it is a consideration. And I know that there would be some abolitionists who would say, well, they know exactly what they're doing. Well, there's a lot of people who would say they don't. Furthermore, many are being pressured in ways. Now, again, just hang in there with me for a moment. We're just taking a look at a fuller understanding, I think, of biblical justice and legal justice in America. There are degrees of culpability based on knowledge. In the Bible, judges leaders and teachers and shepherds more strictly than those under their influence. Greater authority carries greater responsibility. That is a legal reality. So maybe now you're asking, assuming, of course, that you agree with the assessment about the distinction between the doctors and the women. And I think it's a conversation that we should dive into deeper. You're perhaps, at least hopefully, asking, so what's the solution, Barnabas? Next on Wretched Radio.
You know that moment at 3 a.m. when you can't sleep, everything is quiet, and you're alone with the truth about who you really are versus who everyone thinks you are. Your wife trusts you, your kids look up to you, the guys at church think you've got it all together, but you know better. You know the secret battles, the deleted history, the promises you keep breaking to yourself and to God. Here's what took me way too long to figure out. You can't fix a spiritual problem with human solutions. Accountability software won't change your heart. White knuckling it through another week won't either. And Todd Friel is getting to the heart of this issue with his resource, Play the Man. It doesn't give you another list of rules. It shows you how Christ actually changes men from the inside out. How he replaces the wanting, not just the doing. The man your family deserves, that guy is possible, but not through your own strength. It's going to be through the strength of Christ working through you. Play the Man. It's available now as an ebook, an audiobook, and a video series only at fortisplus.org. Because real men know when they need real help.
Would you like the university experience without the, you know, university experience? The Masters University invites you to visit their campus, or you can visit them online at masters.edu/wretched to discover a Christian college that is biblical, that offers all of the academic excellence you desire. Sports, athletics, arts, communication, all of the activities of, you know, a secular university without the, you know, secular parts. Please consider the Masters University online, or of course, on-campus learning, undergrad, master's, and doctoral programs. It's Masters University, the university with the university experience without the university experience. Masters.edu/wretched.
Ask most Christians what they know about hermeneutics, and you'll likely get, Herman who? That sounds like somebody's uncle. Is that the guy that always comes and just stays quiet in the back of the small group? Hermeneutics is actually the art and science of interpreting scripture. And if you don't know how to do it rightly, you're going to read the Bible wrongly. Worse, you're actually going to be an easy target for every false teacher with a podcast and a proof text. Herman Hu is basically a master's level education in how to read the Bible correctly, and it's condensed into something that you can actually finish. You'll learn how to interpret a 2,000-year-old book in a 21st century world without twisting it into something it was never meant to say. By the end of it, you'll never read scripture the same way again, and you'll never have the wool pulled over your eyes by someone who sounds competent but doesn't know what they're talking about. Herman Hu, it is streaming right now for free on Fortis Plus. Download the app on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to fortisplus.org.
Know your church fathers. Clement of Alexandria was an apologist in the late 2nd century. He ran a school in Alexandria, Egypt, where he instructed new converts and trained Christian apologists. He taught that only Christianity, with its revelation from God in the Bible, has the answers regarding creation, good and evil, and salvation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And then you've got legal reality. This is Wretched Radio. In an effort to perhaps call for a truce between pro-lifers and abolitionists, who all are pro-life, who all want abortion abolished, it happens to be an issue about tactics and ultimately, courtesy of the state of Tennessee, what about women who participate in abortions once they are illegal? The abolitionist would say, put him on trial for murder. I think it's fair to say many pro-lifers, if not most pro-lifers, would say, not so fast. I would like to offer, I hope, what might possibly bring the two groups together. Now, to do that, I think that some decisions need to be made along the way. This my solution that I am going to offer here in a minute does require establishing some facts. And you need to either agree with them or not, because if we can't get these building blocks put in place, then my solution, it just crumbles. It will go nowhere. So if you're pro-life, and I trust that you are, I mean, whether you're an abolitionist or not, I think the syllogism that abolitionists use needs to be considered. So here's the syllogism. Abortion is the intentional taking of an innocent human life. We all agree on that. The intentional taking of a human life, we would call that murder, and we agree murder must be prosecuted. Therefore, women must be prosecuted. Now, hang in there, my pro-life friends, because I know you're saying, well, wait a second, hold on a second. You've already talked about all those instances where women, they either have no education about the issue of abortion, they have been misinformed for decades that it is not the intentional taking of a human life, it's just a blob of tissue. Furthermore, the issue of authority, they are under authority and they're being pressured by those in authority, and it's being performed by those in authority who happen to have a greater knowledge. Therefore, we can go after the doctors that perform the abortions, but you would argue, but not those women for those reasons. Well, that's the second block that I think that we need to spend some time either confirming or denying. Do women know what they're doing now? Does it matter that women are pressured now? Does it matter that those in authority who should know better are they're definitely willing to perform it and even encourage it? Do we agree on those things? I don't know if you're nodding your head or shaking it, but I'm going to assume for the moment that we can agree on both of those things. That if somebody, whether the baby is in the womb or not, should make absolutely no difference. If we're going to be pro-life, that's the intentional taking of an innocent human life. Somebody needs to be culpable for that. Can we affirm that? Secondly, can we affirm together that there are women, I'm not going to offer a percentage because you can look at one study, I'll look at another study, but can we agree that at this time in American history, most women are deluded into thinking it's no different than removing a mole. It's just a blob of tissue. Now, this is a good argument to have, and I get it, because I think the abolitionist would say, so if they just think it's a mole, why do they weep in the waiting room? I agree. Because I think intuitively they know what they're doing, and yet, is it possible they override their conscience because they've been told, well, it's just a blob of tissue? We need to consider that and determine, do we affirm that there are some women that are ignorant, that are being pressured, and that are being really misled by those in authority? Now, if we can agree on both of those things, now we can take a look at legislation. What should be the punishment for them? Well, I think we've already seen that there are distinctions when it comes to criminal guilt. The issue of knowledge, the issue of intent, the issue of authority. Those are very valid considerations. Furthermore, there is the issue of reality. Now, again, my abolitionist friend, hang in there with me just for a moment. I'm sharing with you an article from the Christian Post titled "The Pro-Life Movement is Facing an Internal Fracture." I think we haven't faced it. We're experiencing it right now. And I hope that if nothing else, maybe we can just have warm conversations about this, not adversarial conversations. We're really on the same team. We just have different strategies as to like how to go about doing this or that, how to pass the legislation incrementally or in totality. And this particular issue about what to do with women who have abortions once they are illegal. Now, the article points out legal reality, that you can have a law, but if it isn't enforceable, there's usually no point. So here's from the article. If abortion were prosecuted under homicide statutes, it would be difficult to enforce it. Medication abortions are indistinguishable from miscarriages. It's a private act. Forensic evidence is minimal. Proving intent beyond reasonable doubt would be complex and inconsistent. Further, laws that cannot be enforced uniformly don't produce equal justice. Typically, it's selective enforcement. So you've got questions of coercion, deception, misinformation that would complicate pretty much every single case. And courts would be faced with all kinds of ambiguity, plea bargaining, jurisdictional inconsistency. And so this author writes, justice is not only about moral clarity, it's about whether the law can be applied fairly and consistently in the real world. So with that as our backdrop, what do I think might be a peacemaking offer? I think it is this. If we agree on the two building blocks that if somebody intentionally takes a life in or out of the womb, there must be culpability, must be, for all of the parties that are guilty. The second building block would be that we recognize there are some issues that might cause us to see the crime committed by a woman who is obviously involved in the abortion as being at least less culpable. But I think there's a third building block, and this is key, and this actually ties into my proposal. And that is where we are at right now, where we are at. I think the issue of education is monstrous. I can't read the heart of every single woman involved in an abortion. And yes, I know that there are women, they are in for their seventh, their eighth, their 17th abortion, and they are calloused. They don't care. So what if it is a baby? I'm going to kill it anyway because I need to do what I need to do. Yep, that does exist. I suspect that's the exception and not the rule, however. And so my proposal is this. Let's make abortion illegal. Totally, completely, no exceptions. Let's get there. Now, incrementally or immediately, that's not in view in our conversation right now. So let's keep working toward that. Well, we've had that conversation before. We'll have it again. But until the day that it is, let's keep working to make it abolished in America. Then I propose you pick the number of years. We go on a campaign, 3-5 years, not unlike the campaign that was waged against the tobacco industry to encourage everybody to stop smoking, where we educate. I'm talking billboards, I'm talking commercials, I'm talking it is everywhere. Abortion is murder. Abortion, it is a crime in this state. In the year 20, whatever it is, you will be tried. You need to understand, this is not a blob of tissue. This is not a mole. This is a human being. And if we can do an education campaign, it would have to be in the schools. It would, by the way, I don't know how to do all of this. I'm just saying, here's my proposal. If we can re-educate America so that all of the women have no excuse for knowing that the abortion that they are involved in is the intentional taking of an innocent human life, then I think we would all have to affirm because the knowledge issue is no longer in play, the willingness issue, now the pressure issue, by the way, being coerced by somebody, that would be weighed just like it is for a criminal case of murder for a human being outside of the womb. It would be brought into consideration. So that would be considered, but that wouldn't necessarily remove all culpability and guilt. I think the issue is the time of day that we're living in and knowledge. So my proposal is simple. Let's get it outlawed. And if we can go on an education campaign where beyond the shadow of a doubt, people know that abortion is the intentional taking of an innocent human life, aka murder, then whoever is involved with that murder should be prosecuted. Agreed? This is Wretched Radio.